I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is Business Wise. My guests today are Sister Jean Bissett. Sister Jean is the president of DePaul Cristo Rey High School, and with Sister Jean is Lisa Clater. And Lisa is the director of Work Study Program. DePaul Cristo Rey High School was just started recently, and it's not your traditional educational institution. Maybe you can share why this school is different.
That's correct. We follow a different business model, a unique business model for college prep high schools. We started in order to serve students who can't afford a traditional college prep high school, a private school. And the way that we're able to help our students afford it is they actually are working their way through high school. They participate from the day they start as 14-year-old ninth graders until they graduate in a corporate work-study program. They do clerical work typically in offices, white-collar jobs where they work side-by-side with college-educated professionals.
Back in 2009, you had no facility, no students, no anything, and you've created this amazing program. And Lisa, you are the director of the corporate work-study program. Maybe
That's
you can
correct.
Share a little bit further how this corporate work program works.
Well, when students enter our school right away, they're subjected to about 50 hours of training to get them ready for the workplace. You wouldn't typically expect a 14, 15-year-old to know how to shake hands, how to conduct themselves in a professional setting. So we spend a lot of prep time getting students ready for that. Then they begin school for 10 months, and part of that curriculum is to work one day a week in a corporate setting.
That's amazing. I mean, this is something that I think all young people could really learn from.
We're really part of a network of schools. So although we're starting this school from scratch in Cincinnati, and we are the 24th school in the United States that's following this work-study model in this Cristo Rey network.
Well, how has it worked out in other cities where it's
fabulously well? I mean, to the point where in cities after they've been doing this high school program and this work-study program for a while, they have companies coming to them not to hire one team of four students. There are companies, hospitals, law firms, that will hire 8, 9, and 10 teams of kids. And they find meaningful work for those students to do every single day of the week for 10 months.
Is this program open to any student? How do you go about participating?
There are a couple of requirements. One is you have to be eligible economically. This is a program that's for families that perhaps wouldn't have school choice options otherwise. Because we're not a tuition-driven school, there are some economic means tests that you have to pass. And you have to take the typical placement test for high school. But for anyone in Southeast Ohio and the greater Cincinnati area, we're certainly open.
And students have to be able to do a pretty traditional college prep course of studies. We are not a vocational high school, even though we have this corporate work study program. And our students have to be sincerely aspiring the best they can as a 14-year-old to want to go to college and finish it. We have about 80 students currently. We hope to have about 160 next year. We'll have freshmen and sophomores next year.
Okay, so this first, right now, we're just dealing with freshmen?
Correct.
Correct. And we have about 24 corporate partners right now that are hiring our students.
We already have 37 companies signed on for next year.
With education being such an issue, mm-hmm. Do you see this type of program, this type of school, even going into the more traditional public schools?
Part of me would love to see that happen because I think it's great preparation for students going into careers and into professions. Part of me doesn't want it to happen because, honestly, I don't want them taking our market share.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like a true business person, Sister Jean. But if folks listening today would like more information, how can they learn more about DePaul Cristo Rey High School?
They can check our website at www.discoverdepaul or 513-861-0600.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney Faulkner and Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Crystal Faulkner, and this is BusinessWise. My guests today are Sister Jean Bissett. Sister Jean is the president of DePaul Cristo Rey High School, and with Sister Jean is Lisa Clater. And Lisa is the director of Work Study Program. DePaul Cristo Rey High School was just started recently, and it's not your traditional educational institution. Maybe you can share why this school is different.
That's correct. We follow a different business model, a unique business model for college prep high schools. We started in order to serve students who can't afford a traditional college prep high school, a private school. And the way that we're able to help our students afford it is they actually are working their way through high school. They participate from the day they start as 14-year-old ninth graders until they graduate in a corporate work-study program. They do clerical work typically in offices, white-collar jobs where they work side-by-side with college-educated professionals.
Back in 2009, you had no facility, no students, no anything, and you've created this amazing program. And Lisa, you are the director of the Corporate Work Study Program. Maybe
That's
you can
correct.
Share a little bit further how this corporate work program works.
Well, when students enter our school right away, they're subjected to about 50 hours of training to get them ready for the workplace. You wouldn't typically expect a 14, 15-year-old to know how to shake hands, how to conduct themselves in a professional setting. So we spend a lot of prep time getting students ready for that. Then they begin school for 10 months, and part of that curriculum is to work one day a week in a corporate setting.
That's amazing. I mean, this is something that I think all young people could really learn from.
We're really part of a network of schools. So although we're starting this school from scratch in Cincinnati, and we are the 24th school in the United States that's following this work-study model in this Cristo Rey network.
Well, how has it worked out in other cities where it's...
Fabulously well. I mean, to the point where in cities after they've been doing this high school program and this work-study program for a while, they have companies coming to them not to hire one team of four students. There are companies, hospitals, law firms, that will hire 8, 9, and 10 teams of kids. And they find meaningful work for those students to do every single day of the week for 10 months.
Is this program open to any student? How do you go about participating?
There are a couple of requirements. One is you have to be eligible economically. This is a program that's for families that perhaps wouldn't have school choice options otherwise. Because we're not a tuition-driven school, there are some economic means tests that you have to pass. And you have to take the typical placement test for high school. But for anyone in Southeast Ohio and the greater Cincinnati area, we're certainly open.
And students have to be able to do a pretty traditional college prep course of studies. We are not a vocational high school, even though we have this corporate work study program. And our students have to be sincerely aspiring the best they can as a 14-year-old to want to go to college and finish it. We have about 80 students currently. We hope to have about 160 next year. We'll have freshmen and sophomores next year.
Okay, so right now we're just dealing with freshmen?
Correct.
Correct. And we have about 24 corporate partners right now that are hiring our students.
We already have 37 companies signed on for next year.
With education being such an issue, Do you see this type of program, this type of school, even going into the more traditional public schools?
Part of me would love to see that happen because I think it's great preparation for students going into careers and into professions. Part of me doesn't want it to happen because, honestly, I don't want them taking our market share.
Mm-hmm. Spoken like a true business person, Sister Jean. But if folks listening today would like more information, how can they learn more about DePaul Cristo Rey High School?
They can check our website at www.discoverdepaul or 513-861-0600.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Crystal, today I want to talk about a topic that we touched on briefly in an interview we had with Dr. George Riedeveld a few weeks ago, and that's the state of Social Security in the United States.
He is the former director of the University of Cincinnati Economics Center for Research and Education, but he is one of the leading economists in our region.
We were actually talking to him about the economic crisis at that point, which was Greece, and the fact that they basically haven't been able to keep their income up with their spending. They've made so many promises to so many people, borrowed money to make social promises, and are thus facing their financial crises. And Dr. Riedeveld mentioned we have some parallels in the United States, including our Social Security and Medicaid systems, as well as the overwhelming amount of debt that we have in the government, because we've been running at a large deficit for the last several years. One of our listeners thought that we were denigrating the Social Security system, which I don't think he was.
Well, certainly we weren't intending to do that.
Nor was Dr. Riedeveld. I think his point was, and this has been pointed out by the Social Security Administration trustees in their annual report, the point is that there's not enough money going into the system in terms of the payroll taxes that fund it to pay for all the benefits that are accruing in the system. There's enough money to pay for the current benefits, but not enough to pay for all the promised benefits over the next 75 years.
Unless something changes. So, and I think that is the big point here, because the Social Security system was set up decades ago when people lived a lot less.
Yeah, I think the average life expectancy was 65 when Social Security was first formed. And so theoretically, you live beyond your life expectancy to even collect Social Security.
And many people work beyond 65, or they have the ability to work beyond 65 today, just because, fortunately, we are living longer as a society.
Yeah, and I think most people recognize that there's a funding problem with Social Security. The disagreement is on how you fix it. Do you reduce the benefits? Do you postpone the retirement age? You know, make it longer. They've already done that once. It used to be 65 to get the normal benefit, and now it's, you know, 66 and some number of months.
And that is a big hot potato. Politically, it's a hot potato, and unfortunately, it's one that doesn't look like it's going to get solved anytime soon.
Yeah, generally, anytime you're talking about taxes, and that the other way to fix the system is to raise the taxes, is most people are happy if you raise taxes as long as you don't raise their tax.
So I guess the whole point of this conversation is to do a couple of things, to talk about Social Security, because I do think the more people are aware and understand what the issue is, hopefully the more it will become an issue that is dealt with in our generation and our lifetimes, as opposed to, I hate to use this word but or this term, but kicking the can down the road and forcing our children to deal with that in a future generation.
Yeah, one of the articles I looked at said that they're estimating that there's a liability, an unfunded liability of approximately $350,000 per family as a result of the unfunded Social Security.
So in addition to the mortgage that you're paying, the car loans that you're paying, the college savings that you're trying to generate, you're telling me that each family has an additional $350,000 of estimated liability if we wanted today to fix the Social Security system.
Right. And it's not unlike the City of Cincinnati pension, you know, all the other state and local and governmental pension plans that are all underfunded. In fact, those are probably better funded than Social Security.
It's just so hard because politically no one wants to make those tough decisions. And the reality of it is it's not probably going to be a single solution. There'll have to be a lot of compromises. People will have to give in multiple ways if we want to truly fix Social Security for the long term.
And it'll have to be done immediately after an election. It certainly won't be done before one.
For Business Wise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is Business Wise. Tom, I think lending, in terms of banks loaning money to businesses, primarily smaller businesses, seems to be loosening up, but yet it's still difficult, we are hearing, for many small businesses to get that much-needed loan to grow their working capital, to grow a new product line. There are some very specific things people should do if they're looking to obtain a loan.
Since the recession, credit has remained tight. Banks have tightened their guidelines, and it's not as easy to get a loan as it used to be.
And some of the things that people should be aware of if you are looking to increase your financing or before you talk to the bank is make sure you have a very specific, clear message in terms of what you're going to do with the money, why you need the money, and how it's going to enhance your business and enhance your profitability, help you grow your company, increase your cash flow, because the bank is very interested in how you're going to pay the money back.
Right. Banks don't want to lend money to fund your losses. They want to lend money to fund your growth. They may want to lend money to fund your working capital. So you have to have a good story as to why you need the money. Your business is increasing. It takes more capital so that you can continue to increase your profits.
And before you approach your banker, make sure that you have scrubbed your financial statements to the best of your ability. Cut your costs if you can, scrutinize every expense, and take action, even if it means cutting your own salary, until you can at least break even. They're very interested in how you're going to generate cash. Again, cash is generally king for businesses.
You know, one thing that always impresses bankers is if you can compare your business to other businesses in your industry and it compares favorably. And the fact that you even have those ratios and can express that to a banker enhances your credibility.
I do want to mention that the state of Ohio has come out recently in the last 6 weeks with three brand new loan programs designed especially and specifically for qualifying small businesses. And they are really things that programs that I think every business who is looking to buy real estate, buy equipment, needs to check out to see if it can work. There's the Collateral Enhancement Program, the Ohio Capital Access Program, and then the Targeted Investment Program. They are effectively risk mitigators. So if you go to the bank, say, hey, I want to buy a piece of equipment. The bank says, that sounds great. The only problem is you don't have enough collateral to put down in terms of a down payment. This might be a great opportunity for you to take advantage of one of these state programs. You talk to your banker, say, I understand the state's got some new programs. How can I participate? And if you can qualify, the state will actually place a deposit with the bank in cash so that you can effectively fill the gap. The website is www.ssbci.development.ohio.gov. Or if you'd like more information, Tom and I wrote a column about this recently in the Inquirer. I'll be happy to send you a copy of the column. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Linda Antis. Linda is the president and the CEO of the Cincinnati USA Regional Tourism Network. I understand how amazing the city is, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize all of the wonderful things that are here.
Absolutely.
For people in Cincinnati. Maybe you can share your role and why it's so important to our region.
It's so exciting to be in this business. And at the Regional Tourism Network, we sort of say, it's a great place to visit. You might want to live, work, and stay here. And really, that's kind of an underlying business theme that we have for everything we do. But really think about it. We're in the heart, or we just started off our wonderful red season, and everybody understands the reds are what we call a driver. There are reasons why people leave their couch, get in the car, or hop on a plane and decide they're going to come and visit. One of the things that we do is we survey our visitors. They look for information from us, and then we ask them, did you actually visit? And if so, what did you do? What were your favorite things to do? How much did you spend? How old are you? Was it family? Was it couple? So we're very research-driven.
Lonely Planet Travel Guide has named Cincinnati, this entire region, as one of its top three U.S. weekend travel destinations for this year. That's a great accomplishment, and I think you had a lot to do with that.
Well, it is. It's a huge accolade, especially from someone like Lonely Planet, who's online. They publish literally the, you know, encyclopedia-sized travel planning. It is a wonderful accolade. It's very true. And at the Regional Tourism Network, we do work on weekend getaways. We promote weekend after weekend to make sure that people understand the rich tapestry of experiences we have in our region. What I loved about Lonely Planet's statements was not only just they said a worthy weekend getaway, but they really thought of us as a region, which is what we are. Northern Kentucky, Greater Cincinnati, the arts, the sports, the wonderful natural beauty.
Well, besides the Reds, let's talk about some specific things. What are some of your favorite tourism activities?
I have many, many favorites. And of course, having gone to school for theater and business, I love the arts. And I can't see enough wonderful things at the Aronoff or at Playhouse. And we have a wonderful symphony, the arts and culture on both sides of the river with the ballet and the symphonies. Beautiful work. We have professional and collegiate sports. Those are drivers. I mentioned earlier the concept of a driver, a reason that someone would literally leave their home and make a trip for multiple reasons. Look at the wonderful museums we have. The Art Museum with its, not only its wonderful collections, but the fact that it's free. And then there's another favorite I have, the Cincinnati Museum Center.
If folks would like to learn about all of these great attractions, what's your website?
CincinnatiUSA.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Linda Antis. Linda is the president and CEO of Cincinnati USA Regional Tourism Network. I know recently Cincinnati was named as one of the top three U.S. weekend travel destinations for 2012. What are some of the reasons people come to Cincinnati in 2012? In particular, is the World Choir Games a big driver of that?
We're going to find out, I believe, and we all are working towards the fact that it will be one of the big drivers. One of the things the Regional Tourism Network does is we research our visitors every single year to understand why they visit and understand a little bit about what interests them. The World Choir Games will be an important piece, and there are so many things that people can enjoy and love weekend after weekend here. Let's take, for example, the Cincinnati Museum Center. We all understand it's that beautiful piece of architecture that now houses three
different museums, an Omnimax theater, and every year they bring a very special event. This year it happens to be a day in Pompeii. That exhibition is going to be spectacular. I've been through it three times already. It's surprising how many folks in our own town probably take for granted the rich experiences and the tapestry of beautiful different experiences that we do have here. And Museum Center is certainly one. We have a world-class zoo. We have an aquarium on the southern side of Cincinnati, USA, here in the region that is number one in the Midwest, as voted by Zagat. So we have all kinds of great experiences that both residents, but more importantly, the out-of-town visitor finds very compelling, very, very interesting to them to marry with some of their favorite things to do. We have, as you can imagine, we probably have as many different kinds of visitors as we do residents here. We have families who travel. We have couples who love to do weekend getaways, romantic getaways. They love our shopping, our dining. And yes, the entertainment experiences you named, we've talked about, are some of the driving reasons people visit.
Mm-hmm. What is the economic impact, Linda?
The economic impact the RTN has driven over the last 4 years is $264 million. That was $72 million last year alone, and that's just the activity driven through our website, which is CincinnatiUSA.com. So if you are a resident, or if you happen to have friends and family out of town, what you need to do is say, go to the largest travel portal called CincinnatiUSA.com. You're going to find exciting things to do, and you'll find packages that make it value priced for you to come.
Do you think that the recession has helped or hindered this? I mean, do you think because of the recession, more people from surrounding areas have chosen to do a Cincinnati getaway weekend?
Our results in the past 4 years would point to the fact that despite the economic downturn, we have been very strong and have actually lifted the performance and the economic impact from tourism in our region.
What do you suggest to people? Do they actually make a date with themselves and their families, put it on the books, make reservations, buy tickets, and have a stay-at-home getaway weekend?
I would suggest that you plan it. And our website, as I said, CincinnatiUSA.com, makes it very easy for you to find by category the kinds of things you like to do. We also organize it by season. Because think about when you make travel plans, it's probably at the time when you have the most time available to do the kind of things you want to do. So it's very easy to shop it and find it there and then turn into your own visitor in your own town.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Davis. Matt is the Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. And I know how passionate you are about the importance of making a difference here in our community related to governmental issues.
The reason that the chamber gets involved in politics, gets involved in government issues is because our members are the ones who drive the economy. They're the ones who create the jobs. And if we want to see our economy flourish, we want to create business, and we want to bring families to our region, we need to make sure that we have policies that allow those small and large businesses to be able to grow and flourish. So we need to be in the business community really needs to be in the game.
Well, Matt, virtually every law affects businesses in some way, either positively or negatively. But I'm sure you've identified some key issues that you really focus on in terms of your efforts. What are some of those issues?
This year, we're focusing our efforts on transportation and infrastructure because businesses need to move people and commerce from point A to point B. Our infrastructure is crumbling. We don't invest enough in it. In fact, China invests 9% of its GDP in infrastructure. We invest about 1.5% of our nation's GDP in infrastructure. So we need to invest more so we can grow jobs. Number two is workforce development. In Ohio, Governor Kasich has been quoted as saying we have 80,000 unfilled jobs in Ohio right now. That's a real problem. So we need to figure out the best way to better link businesses with universities and schools and K-12 and other training institutions so that we can fill the short-term needs. Those are those 80,000 jobs we have right now, but then also build a long-term pipeline to make sure that we are training for the skills and jobs of tomorrow.
How do you go about gathering the people around you and involved with the chamber to really see some action come out of these ideas?
It takes tremendous amount of staff time to spend meeting with members to sit down and talk about what are the things that you're thinking about every day? What are the things that we as the chamber should be thinking about every day? What are the things that affect your business? What what's getting in the way of you being able to keep the lights on or hire that extra person. So we do a lot of work face-to-face meeting with our members, but then also gathering them in groups around specific issues or bringing elected officials in at different levels of government to really get a really put a face to that issue. And
Well, you not only bring officials in, but you actually go and meet with them in Columbus and Washington as well.
Just had a very busy month of March. We went to Columbus and Washington, D.C., took approximately 90 chamber members, business leaders, community leaders as well to, again, make sure that Cincinnati region is engaged and in the game in Washington and Columbus. It's much more compelling to have a local business owner or community leader giving that story.
Matt, if people would like to learn more about some of the issues and how they can get involved, what's the website or contact information?
For more information on all the work that the Chamber does, I would suggest going to www.cincinnatichamber.com, or for specifically our advocacy piece, go to cincinnatiusavotes.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Matt Davis. Matt is the Vice President of Government Affairs for the Cincinnati USA Regional Chamber. Recently took a couple of delegations to Washington and Columbus, respectively, to meet with legislators. What were some of the outcomes?
I think on the outcome side, we were certainly able to make our voice heard on our key issues of transportation, workforce development, and then tax and regulatory, make sure we have a competitive tax and regulatory climate. As far as legislative outcomes, I don't know that you'll see a lot, particularly in Washington. I think things will certainly slow down over the next couple months as we get ready for the election season. We went to Columbus. There, the governor has introduced his mid-biennium review, which is a top-to-bottom look at the state's budget. And we had some opportunities to play a role in crafting some pieces of that. So we're happy with that. But I think even once that exercise is completed, I think you'll see Columbus sort of slowing down as well as we prepare for the November election.
The Chamber looks at business issues, things that need to occur here in our state and our region to make business easier and more profitable. That's a big role for the Chamber.
It absolutely is, and it's also a delicate task too, because we're large organizations. We have large and small members that cover a number of different issues, and we don't aren't necessarily always on the same side of an issue. So we have to make sure that we take the time to really go out and canvass our members and figure out where they are on an issue. And then at the end of the day, we feel like we can go to sleep at night. We can sleep soundly at night knowing that we've acted in the best interest of the overall majority. So yes, we certainly take the opportunity to talk to our members so that we can be that voice and make sure that we're speaking for our members. Also, what we like to do through our program of work, not only just try to build a consensus within our group and educate our members on what's going on, but also educate them. So to your point about not having the resources all the time to be able to have an internal lobbyist, to be able to do some of those things on your own in the future, mm-hmm. By learning how to meet with electeds and work on those issues.
Well, I mean, what the issues are. What's occurring right now that could potentially impact your business and you individually going down the road?
That's right. I mean, as particularly in small business, you spend enough time just, again, trying to keep the lights on. You don't always have time to pay attention to the things that I think about every day.
Well, one issue that I think most of your constituents would agree on is the transportation issue, and particularly the Brent Spence Bridge replacement. Do you think you'll see much progress on that in terms of funding?
Well, at the federal level, it was disappointing to see that we weren't able to get a long-term bill passed this year, but there's a short-term extension. What that means for us at the local level is that we have to be creative in how we come up with funds.
The whole conversation of, quote, tolls was not even up for discussion.
Mm-hmm. It was not up for discussion. Where our position is on it, we don't necessarily support tolls, but we do think that given the fact that federal government does not have enough money to fund these large projects, we have to be able to have everything on the table to figure out how to best complete them.
So, Matt, if someone listening would like more information, what the issues are, get involved, let them know their opinion, how can they reach you?
They can reach us at www.cincinnatichamber.com. And if they want to get involved in our advocacy efforts, we'd recommend they visit www.cincinnatiusavotes.com.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.
I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney.
And this is BusinessWise. Our guest today is Jamie Gertzen. Jamie is the president and the CEO of Apollo Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling. And you have done a wonderful job in really distinguishing Apollo's name in what I perceive to be a very crowded mm-hmm. industry. Let's talk about how you've done that and what you can share with others that's listening on how they can distinguish their company.
If you look at a three-hour radius, there are 694 competitors that we compete against within a three-hour radius of Cincinnati. The key element is people. We're in a people-to-people business, not a business-to-a-business or a business-to-consumer. So the frontline folks that you have working for you are the key element to that success. So if you were to look at a fishbowl and you put all those goldfish in that bowl, they all look the same and act the same. So the real question is, how do you get a, sort of a brand differentiator? So we look at ways to do things like create incentive contests. But you can't do an incentive contest every week because it basically creates a lead lag effect where people get pretty tired of it. So,
well, let's talk about that. So incentive contests. Now, right. What kind of incentive contests?
When we think about incentive, we think about holistic incentives. And we think about how do you incentivize somebody personally, better family members, better business people, as well as better community organizers or people that get engaged in their community. So we do things like we'll build a contest around multiple structures so everybody in the organization can win. So whether it's a trip to Key West, whether it's a cash reward, whether it's a gift card to Kroger's, I've ridden a horse in before.
Well, I was going to say, I've heard some stories about you. Why do you think that kind of activity and behavior works with employees?
So in my experience, having worked for other people in my life, is that what inevitably happens when the owner or boss wants to get you motivated, he stands in front of the room and tells you what you need to do. And it's blah, 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 blah. So what I tend to do is say, well, let's get on a horse in Norwood and let's ride a horse in holding a real live rooster and dress up like a cowboy. And what happens is you create a level of engagement, because if you're willing to risk yourself for the passion of what you do, typically what will happen is you get some people that are really into it. And then the people that aren't typically don't stick around. My favorite one, though, is that in Christmas, I dress up like Santa, dressed up as a leprechaun.
That would be cute.
Yeah, it's kind of a six foot three, 250-pound guy.
I was going to say, do they have leprechaun outfits that size?
Right. We have a mascot right now called Gritty. It's a rooster, and it's a yard ornament, and we just take it around the city and take pictures of it and send it out at random times, and whoever guesses right. We had a Peppy the Leppy, which was like a garden gnome that looked like a leprechaun. In the issue, the key word is fun. So most people think about work that it's not fun. And so in the heating, air conditioning, plumbing business, people call us because they have problems. And so the problem, if you're a technician in the field or a frontline representative, you're dealing with people under stressful situations. So how do we lighten it up? So it's all about, I think, collaboration of leadership. So leadership is at every level in your organization, whether you realize it or not. And if you look at organizations that are high performing, they are cause-based organizations. There's organizations like Zappos. So how does it work when a guy pays somebody $2,500 to not work there? You can train 2 weeks, I'll pay you $2,000 or $2,500 to leave. Or organizations like Apple. Why does Apple work? Or what Dunhubby does for Kroger's? There is this belief or a cause for what you're doing that, quite frankly, makes pay the most irrelevant thing of the process.
Jamie, if people would like more information about Apollo, what's your contact information?
ApolloHome.com is our website, and 271-3600.
That's a 513 area code. For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate. I'm Tom Cooney.
And I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And this is BusinessWise. Today, our guest is Jamie Gertson, who is the president and CEO of Apollo. And you were our guest yesterday, and you mentioned that Zappos, for instance, pays people $2,500 to leave. You know, they train them for 2 weeks, and then they offer them $2,500 to leave. Explain the thinking behind that.
Well, I think it's interesting. I think it's $2,500, it could be two. But first, when you hear that as a leader, you think it's an urban legend. But when you really look at it, what we're asking, or when we look at that as in theory, is the leader of that business is saying is, I'd rather pay you to leave than to see you as the walking dead. In other words, if you're not going to contribute to our organization, let me pay you to leave now. Thank you for your time. And so he's saying, if money is the only motivator on why you're here, that's not enough. You got to have, in a customer relation business like they're in, or like we're in, you have to have the first and foremost, the core value of you like to serve people. You have to be empathetic.
But the key is, Jamie, how do you find those people? Where do you get those people?
I think the way you do that is you have to take a very scientific approach to understand what behaviors drive individuals who are successful within your culture to be successful with your member or your customer. And so that is really a time that's a little bit scientific, but there's some art to it too. And so the first thing that starts is the why. So why does the owner or the leader of the business want to do that? Because if the head of the fish stinks, so does the rest of it. So if we look at it and we say, if you want a really great organization, the real question is, are you the right leader to lead it? So do you have enough courage to say, well, maybe I'm not? And if you are, then do you have enough courage to make the changes that are needed? Because there's a little bit of faith in all this stuff, right?
There is, and you've done some really interesting, what I like to say, fun things to change the culture or make it even a better culture.
Let me tell you quickly how it started. So I was in Boston at a master's program, and I heard a guy speak from a country or a company in Vancouver, and this individual talked about how he had been on a business trip for 3 weeks, came back, pulled in the parking garage. An employee, he saw this employee, waved to the employee. The employee didn't wave back. In fact, she ran into the office so he wouldn't see her. And he said, at that moment, I showed up at the office, hadn't been there for 3 weeks. And if you've never been in, if you've been gone for a couple weeks, come back, you can instantly tell if it's a good place or a bad place to work. You just know how it smells, right? And it, if it stinks, you know it. So he and his business partner about 2 hours later left and sat down at Denny's for 4 hours and talked about why they did it, why were they in this business and all these things. So I took that story to heart because I felt like when I left my business to go to this class, I was happy. We were had great customer satisfaction. We had good people, but we weren't great. And we could have stayed a B company in terms of our culture and who we were, but I decided that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it, and we're going to do it right. So we decided to inject a little fun and got crazy and did things like dressing up like leprechauns and cowboys and, you know.
How's this resulted in bottom line? Do you see a change in your financials as a result of this?
Yeah. So 2011 was our best financial year from a top line, bottom line, gross margin perspective. 2012 is on a ripping pace. You know, coming out of first quarter, we actually are in a very, very strong growth position.
What about motivation? Do you see a change in your employees' attitudes?
We've seen our turnover actually decrease close to 50% from where it was last year. We look at that, and what impresses us most about it is the quality of the hires is changing because A people like A people. And so we're seeing an elevation of staff, which elevates culture. And it's like the flywheel effect Jim Collins talks about. It's good for business, good for customers.
Jamie Gertzen, president of Apollo. If people want information about Apollo,
ApolloHome.com and 513-271-3600.
For BusinessWise, I'm Crystal Faulkner.
And I'm Tom Cooney. We're with Cooney, Faulkner & Stevens, your business advocate.